Thanks for joining us for Now Showing. A one-woman show premieres at Northwest Missouri State University this weekend. Amanda Pettifish-Schrag is Artistic Director of the Theater Department at Northwest and the author of Supergirls, Tales of Life, Love, and Captain Nebraska. She's also the only performer in the production.
It's essentially about four characters who tell about their experiences as supergirls or superwomen in Nebraska.
Now, how did you come up with the idea to set this in Nebraska?
Well, that's an interesting question. And it actually came up in part as I was thinking about this show and the idea of superheroes. It was in part to try and tie it to something that would be, for a Midwestern audience, a little more relatable. And there's a certain ridiculousness about the idea of a bunch of superheroes hanging out in Nebraska for some reason that in some ways I thought would allow some of the themes and some of the ideas that I wanted to explore in this play to come out.
How difficult is it for you to perform all four characters as superheroes?
I think anytime you're the only performer, there are challenges and opportunities. And one of the really instructive components of doing this project has been really having to get specific vocally and physically to distinguish between four characters, as well as to be very sort of doing the things that I always ask my students to do, which is be very articulate about what characters want and need, because that's what takes us through their journey as an audience. So to be sure, in essence, that I'm doing the same things that I'm always telling my students to do. Whenever you don't have an immediate stage partner there with you, you feel a little more, for lack of a better term, naked out there, because the audience is, in essence, your partner then, which is a really interesting dynamic, always is in live theater, but particularly in a one-person show where everything becomes about that. The degree of kind of intimacy you can establish between the performer and the audience. So,
do you have a favorite character?
There's things that I love about each of the characters, and there's things that I find really challenging about playing each of them. And it really is, it's been interesting to see what's come more easily about some than others. One of the characters is a 16-year-old. So trying to go back and think about, well, what was my attitude when I was 16? And how do 16-year-olds move as opposed to me now in my 30s trying to kind of go back to that and find that weird combination of physical freedom that teenagers have, but also the real sense of awkwardness and self-consciousness and that strange juxtaposition has been really fun. And with each of the characters, there have been challenges vocally and physically that have been just really, really enjoyable to work through on the stage and in the writing process too. When you find, it's been interesting because sometimes there's things that I find aren't working in the rehearsal, and the question always is this a challenge that I'm encountering as an actor, or is this something that I need to go back to the text and revise?
Is this the first time you're performing something that you've written?
It is. I've written other things, but I've never been the performer. I've directed other things that I've written, but yes, this is new and exciting.
So, but it must be kind of nerve-wracking, I would think, too, because you're totally out there. I mean, these are your words,
right,
as well as your representation of the characters.
Absolutely. And there was a point, because I've been working on this script now for several months, where I kind of got the script where I wanted to and had this realization of, oh my, now I have to perform this too. So there is I've described it as sort of every night having this moment of panic before I go out, because you hope that what you've written is good enough of a story to bother telling, I guess, that you hope the ideas hold up, because you don't have that outside perspective to really, when I work as a director, I get a text and I assume that it works and I go from there. So it's been interesting to have a text where I can't necessarily assume that it works yet, because it's untried and it's unproven. And of course, we always doubt a little bit our own processes. So yeah, you hope desperately that what you've created is something that an audience will relate to, as well as something that you relate to as a performer and as a writer.
Tell me a little bit about what the story is.
Well, it started as really my attempt to deal with some questions that I think a lot of people, and perhaps more specifically women, deal with in terms of how we handle power. And that was one of the reasons for choosing the superheroes. Several summers ago, my husband, who's a comic book fan, had me read a bunch of comic books, and I was struck by how interesting it was that all of these women in comic books had these tremendous powers and abilities, and yet we're still facing the same things that any other female in any part of the country would face, where they run into, whether it's sexism or a glass ceiling or self-doubt or what do you do with this tremendous power. As I went on, too, I think the story became about a lot of the things that struck me in comic books as being really universal and true. There's this sort of beautiful sense of longing. I don't think we ever associate that with comic books, that perhaps particularly we relate to as teenagers or young adults, where you want things to be better than they are. And yet there's also a reality in comic books that the good guys don't always win. And then what do you do with that? And the idea that things never stay static, that there are rules that hold true, and yet there's this constant evolution of the characters, that even when characters stay consistent, the world around them changes. And so that's part of what the play is about, too. What do you do when the world changes underneath you, and not all of these characters are particularly good at changing with it? All four characters deal with some similar events that have happened, but they reflect on them from different perspectives. And hopefully that's where some of the humor in the play comes from, and also hopefully some of the poignancy for the audience.
What do you hope the audience takes away from this?
I always like, as an audience member, to see work that makes me think about things in a slightly different way, or ask questions that maybe I didn't have when I walked into the theater that night. And I would hope that in this play, audience members would perhaps have questions about what does make a good or a bad choice, and at the end of the day, what is it that's really worth making the choice for? Sort of how do we weigh those choices, and how do we use a really cliche term, how do we use our power for good instead of evil? but in our really mundane day-to-day lives. And I think that's what drew me to sort of the subject matter of this play, is our choices aren't always epic, and yet they all tie back into these really fundamental questions about who we are and how we live our lives.
Amanda Pettifish Shrug says Supergirls, Tales of Life, Love, and Captain Nebraska opens tomorrow and Saturday, and next Friday and Saturday at 7:30 in the Studio Theater at the Houston Center for the Performing Arts at Northwest Missouri State University in Maryville. Theatergoers could be punished for chewing gum or not paying attention at the next Rubidoux Resident Theater presentation. Rubidoux Resident Theater Executive Director Jeff Haney says Late Night Catechism is an interactive play that will take the audience back to school.
Basically, you have a one-woman show, and she's playing Sister. And for anyone that grew up Catholic, they will certainly appreciate some of the teaching methods that were used in the Catholic classroom back then. But you certainly don't have to be Catholic to enjoy the show. She certainly loves to talk to the Lutherans and the Southern Baptists in the audience. But it's interactive. You become part of her classroom. She brings people up on stage. She talks directly to the audience, breaking that fourth wall. And so it's just a joyous evening of remembering what it was like to be a student, you know, in a very strict classroom.
So what types of things might they see her do?
She's going to choose the people that are chewing gum in her classroom, and there will have to be a punishment paid there. She'll bring people up to make sure that they sit in the corner if that is needed. She talks directly to them about their faith And what I find endearing about the show is that really at the end of the evening, it's not what faith you have, but that you have faith. And so it's an uplifting piece at the end, but it's a wonderful comedic performance by Sister.
It's a one-woman show?
It's a one-woman show, professionally done. It's played out in Chicago for 10 years to sold-out audience 7 days a week. And so we're blessed to have Late Night Catechism come back to us. It played Northwest Missouri State University last year, and we're just pleased to be able to bring it to St. Joseph.
Can you talk to me about how difficult it is to carry a show when you're the only person on the stage?
Well, it is difficult, but at the same time, there's some ease about it because there is no worry of an interaction or another person missing an entrance or missing lines. It is all up to you. And this person is highly, highly gifted in the interactive because it depends on what the audience says. It may take her to a different place at that moment because the audience does talk back because she asks specific questions of people.
So it sounds like the audience is considered a character.
Absolutely. They're in the classroom. She'll look at the theater as her classroom. And we do have 100 tickets available to have lunch with her behind the grand drape on the stage. And so the first 100 people that buy their dinner tickets can actually have lunch there. And Sister will make sure you say your blessings, and she will have a good time with you with lunch, and then we'll go out into the Missouri and enjoy the show.
Jeff Haney is the executive director of the Rubidoux Resident Theater in St. Joseph. He says Late Night Catechism will be Sunday afternoon beginning at 2 o'clock at the Missouri Theater in downtown St. Joseph. The St. Joseph chapter of the American Guild of Organists will be continuing a tradition with its members program this weekend. The concert will feature several guild members performing at the First Baptist Church in downtown St. Joseph. Tom Smith is the dean of the St. Joseph chapter.
This is something we've done for several years. Usually at Christmas time, we had some challenges in finding an open date this year, so we thought, well, let's do it in November and focus it on Thanksgiving.
Will there be highlights to this program?
Well, I hope that the hymn singing will be part of that. We are planning to incorporate several traditional Thanksgiving hymns, Come Ye Thankful People Come, We Gather Together, Let All Things Now Living, and I think maybe one or two others, and these will be interspersed through the course of the program.
And who will be performing those?
Several of our members. I will be one of the performers. Jerry Anderson, Professor Emeritus in Music at Missouri Western and organist at First Presbyterian Church here, will be one of those. David Lewis, a local banker and organist at Francis Street First United Methodist Church, will also be performing, both helping with the hymns and performing solo pieces as well.
And who will be singing?
Who will be singing? Everybody there, we hope. We're going to invite the audience to join in on these hymns, and we are hoping that the atmosphere and such will be conducive to really good participation.
Now, you touched on this earlier about it's hard to find a date for a Christmas program.
Yes.
So is this your first year for the Thanksgiving program?
Yes, it is.
How did you decide to do a Thanksgiving program and then to choose the music? Because traditionally you don't think of holiday music for Thanksgiving. How did you go about
right.
that?
Our board of directors had a breakfast meeting earlier this summer, and we were lining out the program for the year and checking the calendar, the arts calendar here in town. Between the symphony and the St. Joseph Community Chorus and the Messiah Project, there just weren't Sundays available, which is when we've traditionally done the program. So then somebody spoke up, I forget who, and said, "Well, let's back it up to November," and we backed it up so far. We thought, "Well, it's not going to work for Christmas, so maybe we can just do a Thanksgiving program and find enough." I know there's enough hymn arrangements, solo pieces for organ that tie in with some of the hymns we'll be doing. Plus, we're going to have some general organ music as well.
How difficult is it to coordinate something where so many organists will be
performing?
Not that difficult. Email makes things wonderfully easy. This day, I can get a hold of all our people all at once, and then just they can get back with me one at a time. I'm organizing the program, putting everything together, but it hasn't been a real problem. We've got several people who are willing to be heard, who aren't afraid to be heard in public, and of course, we do it every Sunday in our churches.
Do you know anything about the instrument that they'll be performing on?
It's a wonderful instrument at First Baptist. The current organ was installed 3 years ago in 2006 by Michael Quimby, the Quimby Pipe Organs of Warrensburg, Missouri, who has done a lot of work in this area as well as in the wider organ world. It's a three-manual organ. It's got 24 ranks, which means 24 separate sets of pipes. Some of them are played on each of the three manuals and on the pedals. It's got some lovely sounds, very soft, gentle organ sounds, as well as full organ. We can fill the church, or we can whisper.
Is that challenging to go from one organ to another?
It is. It comes with the territory for us. Unless an organist just stays at his or her own church all the time. If we travel, we are used to taking that for a test drive, as I say, listening to all the individual sounds that it has and combining them in different ways to see what's really going to work for us. For instance, I was at First Baptist earlier this morning to check it out and made notes as to what sounds are going to work for the pieces I'm playing and just get a feel for that. Of course, I'll be practicing more in the next couple of weeks to get really familiar with it, as will the other organists. We'll all be taking time on the organ there.
On that one?
At First Baptist, okay. Yes. I'd like to make a little pitch for one of the pieces that I will be playing. Mm-hmm. It's a piece called Comes Autumn Time, written by Leo Sowerby. He was a organist in the Chicago area in the first half of the 20th century. He wrote this piece in 1919, and it works well on the organ at First Baptist. It needs a large organ with a lot of different tone qualities to it, from flute and clarinet to full organ to to the softest whispering. And it should be interesting. It should really show off the capabilities of this wonderful instrument.
Smith says the concert will be this Sunday at the First Baptist Church at 12th and Francis Streets in St. Joseph. The concert begins at 3 o'clock.
The Man Who Stared at Goats. Now, how's that as a catchy title for a movie? It even has goats for characters, but they don't get much screen time. The Man Who Stare at Goats premise and the type of characters and incidents are adapted from a book of the same title by John Ronson. Ronson's journalistic book traces the activities of an army unit, the New Age Warriors, or self-professed Jedi. He claims to have interviewed many members of the military who were trained in psi powers, the ability to see the future, teleport, and, yes, stop the heart of a goat just by staring at it. Ronson claims his book is nonfiction, and if so, it's a good example of your tax dollars at work, folks. Director Grant Heslov has adapted Ronson's findings in a story that can be seen as either the delusions of a group of wackos or an affirmation of the powers of the mind. In the film, Bob Wilton, played by Ewan McGregor, is a reporter freshly dumped by his wife, who's having an affair with his boss. Desperate to do something to impress her and make her eat her heart out, he goes off to Kuwait during Desert Storm, hoping to be embedded with a combat unit as a reporter in Iraq. That doesn't work out, but he meets Lynn Cassidy, played by George Clooney, who claims to be on a mission into Iraq as a New Age warrior, and Bob begs to go along with him. And so these two clowns are off into a battle zone where they have adventures about like the one of the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby Road movies. So there are two levels here. First, there's present tense, composed of the narration of Bob Wilton from the time his wife leaves him through the trip to Iraq. Then there are the flashbacks, wherein the New Age Jedi, Cassidy, tells of the origin and development of the Psi Warriors. It goes back to the Vietnam War, when Bill Ojango, played by Jeff Bridges, has an epiphany. While an officer in Vietnam, he realizes that soldiers new to combat rarely actually fire at the enemy, usually aiming high. When Ojango is wounded, he has an epiphany in which he is visited by a benign New Age spirit guide. Or maybe he has a dream and it's a bit of undigested roast beef. Anyway, the experience changes his life. Now Ojango wants to develop the special mental powers to peacefully conquer enemies. After several years hanging out with hippy-dippy New Agers, he sees himself as a shaman and takes his ideas to an army general who's read too many books on contemporary woo-woo mysticism and gets the go-ahead to find and develop soldiers with psi powers. So, we find in one of the flashbacks, Ojango meets and recruits Lynn Cassidy, who seems to be the champion psi guy of the fledgling Jedi Warriors. The flashbacks continue as Lynn and Bob bumble through Iraq, with Cassidy telling Bob about the marvelous stuff the Army New Age Warriors do. But is Cassidy compass? Can he really stop the heart of a goat by staring at it? Does he really have psi powers? Or is he the victim of self-delusion? Since the flashbacks are from him, we only have his word, and the film establishes his traveling buddy Bob as a real skeptic. Of course, there has to be some kind of plot here somewhere. So since the supposed Jedi are servants of the Force, for conflict there has to be a dark side in the person of Larry Hooper, played by Kevin Spacey, a wannabe Jedi who undermines the program to take it over and turns into a sort of miniature Darth Vader. So can these professed Jedi, who are more like Keystone Cops than Psi Warriors, do all the tricks they claim, locate people who are lost, see the future, do telekinesis, and yes, stop the heart of a goat? For the most part, the film leaves us to figure out this thorny issue. One of the weaknesses of The Man Who Stares at Ghosts is that it's such a jumble without a coherent plot development. But I'll admit, there is some decent comedy as the trip goes on. Clooney is, as always, excellent, or as are Jeff Bridges as Ojango and Kevin Spacey as representative of the dark side. And there's some sort of wry irony in casting Ewan McGregor as Bob, the Doubter. He played the young Obi-Wan Kenobi in a couple of Star Wars movies. Trouble is, he's badly miscast here. Comedy clearly isn't his forte. You might say, then, that The Men Who Stare at Goats has wit, and you'd be about half right. It's a sort of movie I could enjoy, but I didn't respect it in the morning. So I'll give it 3 bags of popcorn out of 5.
That was KXCV KRNW movie reviewer Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information and links to the events and organizations you hear about on Now Showing on the KXCV KRNW website, kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday for another edition of Now Showing. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.